I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February 14th, 2018. Let the record reflect. The time is 3:32 p.m. Committee members present: Senator Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Coghill, Senator Bishop, Senator Willikowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator Meyer is excused today. Thanks to Ann and Kelsey, who are helping us out today. We have three items on the agenda. First, we're going to take up Senate Bill 158. This comes from the administration. It is being managed by the Department of Environmental Conservation. We've heard it before. Then we'll take up a second hearing of Senate Bill 173 from Senator Machicki, followed by a second hearing on Senate Bill 92, also by Senator Machicki, which was originally heard on Monday, was scheduled to be heard, but we ran out of time. So, first item, Senate Bill 158. This would give the Department of Environmental Conservation the discretion not to charge homeowners the cost of technical assistance when there's a localized spill, such as a heating oil fuel leak. It was first heard on February 2nd. Public testimony was opened and closed. There are no proposed amendments to this bill at this time, and it's now before the committee. So, is there any discussion or questions for the department on this bill? Committee members? Seeing none. Wow. Kristen Ryan, who's online, you might get off easy. Senator Coghill, did you have a question? No.
No.
Okay.
I'm doing some research, but no, not until we get to finance, probably.
All right. All right. Great. Well, there's no questions. In that case, it is my intent to move the bill. It does go to finance next, as you're right, Vice Chair Coghill. So, Senator Coghill, I will entertain a motion.
Sure, Madam Chair. I move that the Senate Bill 158, Work Order 30GS2583-alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will move. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the document. The next item up is the second item on our agenda. This is Senate Bill 173 by Senator Machicki. The bill would limit the liability for utilities using a specific pesticide on wood utility poles. Senate Bill 173 was heard on Monday. At that time, public testimony was opened and closed. The sponsor has asked for some clarifying changes, and for that reason, we have a proposed committee substitute before us today. It is my intention to adopt this committee substitute and then hold the bill over until Friday for amendments and discussion. Senator Coghill, may I have a motion?
Sure, Madam Chair. I move that the Work Order 30-LS1332 Delta before the committee as our working document.
I will object for purposes of discussion and invite committee staff, Ike Gialopsis, to the table to go through the changes with us.
Madam Chair and members of the Senate Resources Committee, my name is Ike Gialopsis, and I serve as staff to Senator Giesel and to the Senate Resources Committee. Madam Chair, before the committee and in their packet is a document with the title CS for Senate Bill 173, all caps corrected, explanation of changes from version A to version D, or version Alpha to version Delta. Madam Chair, the only difference in this corrected document versus the document that was uploaded yesterday is the presence of change number 2, which we will allude to as we go through the changes. Change number 1, Madam Chair, is on page 1, lines 1 through 2 of the committee substitute, and that amends the title to read, an act relating to the liability of a person for the release of certain pesticides on a wood utility pole. The title in the previous version read, an act relating to the liability of a person or the state for the release of certain pesticides during application on a utility pole. The second change, Madam Chair, is on page 1, line 6. This amends section 1, which would be the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 0965-243, and that removes the words, neither the state nor. Madam Chair, this is with respect to a change that occurs in change number 4 at the direction of legislative legal. By using the definition of person that was given in AS 4603-900, one of the subparagraphs that denote person is the state of Alaska. Therefore, the term state would have been redundant in section 1, and thereby it is removed. The third change, Madam Chair, is on page 1, lines 10 through 11. That amends section 1, the same section, the same newly proposed created 0965-243 of Alaska statute, by rewriting paragraph 1 to read, the release resulted during the installation, use, or removal of a wood utility pole treated with a registered pesticide. The previous paragraph 1, Madam Chair, had read, the release resulted from the application of the pesticide on a wood utility pole during the installation, use, or removal of the utility pole. The final change, Madam Chair, can be found on page 1, lines 14 through 15, and this is amending that same section 1 by adding a new subsection B by reading, for the purposes of this section, person has the meaning given in 4603-900. And for the edification of the committee, Madam Chair, there is a document in the committee packet and online that is a legislative legal memorandum that outlines that from the drafter, Ms. Emily Nauman, and we understand that Ms. Nauman is online if there's questions from the committee. That's the summation of the changes, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, and Ms. Nauman is on the line. So let me reiterate again, committee members, this is my intent with this bill. My plan is to remove my objection so we can adopt this committee substitute and then set the bill aside until Friday's hearing. This will allow time for amendments that folks might be thinking of to be submitted by 5 p.m. tomorrow, 5 p.m. Thursday, to my office. And then we would take up amendments and discussion again on the bill on Friday. So at this time, I'm going to remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the committee substitute? Okay. Senator Wilikowski.
A few questions for either the sponsor or legal?
Well, we need to have a committee substitute before us, of course. Are you objecting?
No, I'm not objecting.
I'm removing my objection.
Yeah, I just would like some opportunity to ask some questions.
Okay, no problem. I am asking if anyone else has any objections. Okay, so I have removed my objection, so the committee substitute is before us. That's version Delta. Senator Wilikowski, you had some questions for the committee sponsor, or the bill sponsor?
Either the sponsor or maybe legislative legal.
Well, why don't we have the sponsor come forward, and then you can ask your question, and we have then the sponsor and Emily Nauman to ask.
Okay, thank you. So I guess question one is on the section that was just modified. And maybe we were working on an amendment on this section, and maybe legislative legal can explain how this section would work. But it's my understanding that 4603-822 deals with strict liability. And so right now, if there's a release of a pesticide, the utility would be strictly liable. And so are we removing all liability, including gross negligence, if someone were grossly negligent, let's say, in the installation of this pole in such a way that it led to somebody's well being contaminated, would there be any liability to anybody under the way this is written?
Senator Machiki, would you like to answer or defer to Emily Nauman?
Madam Chair, I would prefer that you defer to Ledge Legal so that I'm not making a legal claim that perhaps was drafted differently.
All right. Ms. Nauman, did you hear Senator Wilikowski's question?
I did, yes.
Welcome. If you could answer that for us after identifying yourself for the record.
Sure. For the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal. Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, I don't know the answer to your question off the top of my head, but I would be happy to do some research and get back to you about how AS 46-03-822 has been applied.
Ms. Nauman, could you send that response, that clarification, to my office as well as Senator Wilikowski, and then I will make sure all committee members get that. Senator Wilikowski, additional questions?
Yeah, thank you. And I guess maybe for the bill sponsor on this one, but would you be open to a provision that says someone that there still would be liability for gross negligence, let's say, or reckless conduct on behalf of a person who's installing this?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Wilikowski, so think about, like, the fact that we changed on page 1, lines 10 through 11, the previous paragraph said, read the release resulting from the application of a pesticide. The only thing that utility companies do, they don't apply a pesticide. They take a pole that has been treated in the manufacturing process and install it. I'm just wondering how you would get to gross negligence in that installation process. So I'm not sure it fits in this case.
And I don't, if I could.
Senator Wilkowski.
It's a good point. And I don't, there's probably never been a lawsuit. But at the same time, I don't want to forego somebody's ability. We just had up in Flint Hills, for example, hundreds of people's wells that were polluted. And under the current law that we have, their strict liability, we're swinging the pendulum to the complete opposite perspective, saying no liability at all. And a concern that I have is utilities have easements all across the state. Utilities have easements on people's private property. People have wells all across Alaska. There have been documented instances where, in Vermont, for example, where shallow wells have been polluted by Penta to over 1,000 times the EPA maximum containment level. And so the question that I have is who's responsible? If we're eliminating liability for a person, which we're now defining as anyone, I'm concerned that nobody's going to be responsible. I mean, should the manufacturer possibly be responsible? Should the person who's applying it be responsible? It would seem to me there should be some responsibility somewhere other than the person who has absolutely no say about where these poles go. Which, by the way, Art, if I could, Madam Chair, Art, this substance, Penta, is banned in 26 countries. It's banned according to the Stockholm Convention. It's not used. Other countries around the world find different things to use, different alternatives. So we're forcing private homeowners to put a product on their property that is a known carcinogen, that is extremely, that has been listed by the EPA as being extremely toxic, that has contaminated water wells in other states. It seems to me there should be some liability somewhere, or at least if somebody is grossly negligent, at least keep the liability for the applicator or for the manufacturer.
Senator Machicki.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I am sure that there's a place in Alaska law, and I can do the research, or you can do the research through Ledge Legal, if gross negligence occurs in the installation of a pole, say that they penetrate an aquifer or... and I'm not talking about Penta. I'm talking about some other kind of physical or geologic damage, right? I'm sure that this does not release a utility company from gross negligence in as they carry out their duties. It releases them from the effects of Penta. And Penta, in this case, is what we use for power poles in the U.S. I mean, you heard the record the other day. I mean, it's everywhere. It's not banned in the U.S. In fact, the U.S. specifically exempted, as long as it's used in the used under, what was it, FIFRA? We specifically in this country, the country where I live, country where you are, Senator, we specifically exempted the use of Penta in this application. I'm happy to hear whatever information I can learn about gross negligence in the application of a pole, but in the case of Penta, we have a federal exemption because of that, and it's very rare that the feds are ahead of us in an exemption such as this.
Yeah. So, Senator Machicki, I just want to follow up on this. So the comment, you know, we've heard that in Vermont, three times, I believe it was, a pole somehow contaminated an aquifer for a shallow well. Do you know how deep these poles are inserted into the ground, and how deep our wells have to be certified by DEC? I know that people that drill wells on the Anchorage hillside actually cement or seal the top of the wells that are drilled on the hillside because natural nitrates seep in from the surface, the vegetation as it rots emits this substance. And so if the well hasn't been sealed properly, of course it can be contaminated. But how deep are these poles planted? Do you know offhand, or perhaps we could find out?
Madam Chair, I'm not a lineman or a utility worker. I have very specific areas of expertise, but that just isn't one of them. I think we'll have to ask one of the utility companies for that answer.
Okay.
I don't know if you have anyone online or not. But
I just have Emily Nauman and Kristen Ryan from DEC. So perhaps that's a question you could ask some of the utilities and get an answer back for us?
And Madam Chair, Ms. Ryan may have an answer to that question. If not, I will get you an answer from the various utilities that use wooden poles throughout the state.
Okay. I think perhaps your staff might have an answer if she'd like to come to the table. I mean, as long as we're talking about wells and utility poles, it'd be good to clear it up or not. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Rachel Hankey, staff to Senator Michiki, and the poles are roughly 8 feet deep.
8 feet below the surface of the ground?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. I don't know many wells that are terminate at an 8-foot level to access an aquifer in Alaska. Senator Wilkowski, did you have more questions?
I did.
Great.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not saying we should ban the poles. I've never said they were banned penta. But are there any other states, or does the federal government provide absolute exemption from liability for damages that are caused by penta? Are you aware of any other states in the country that do that?
I will have to get you the answer to that question, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair.
Is it possible Ms. Nauman might have that answer?
Perhaps. I assume that the director of the SPAR would have that answer as well.
Well, let's ask Kristen Ryan then, director of SPAR. Ms. Ryan, can you hear us, and did you hear the question?
For the record, this is Kristen Ryan, Director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response. Can you repeat the question, please, for me, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, I'm just curious if there are any other states that provide an absolute exemption from any liability for damages caused by penta in a utility setting.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I am not aware of any state that has released the use of utility poles from gross negligence, and the feds have not as either.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
In one thing they did in Vermont to respond to this issue of the penta seeping into the wells was they created best management practices. Is that something that I guess the bill sponsor would support perhaps an amendment that required DEC to get together with all the parties and come up with some best management practices on how we deal with this installation and removal of these poles that are treated with registered pesticides.
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wilkowski, we expect, and I discussed that in the introduction of the bill, that we expect the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation to put forward best practices for managing poles that are treated with penta.
Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, and then just on the Section 1 where we're exempting a person, I guess for the bill sponsor again, would you object to redefining person so that the ones that we are excluding from liability are the utilities and the state, but not, say, the applicator or not the manufacturer of the pesticide?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I don't like to answer on the fly. I would have to think about that and would be prepared by tomorrow to give you an answer to that question. I don't know that they don't already have an exemption under FIFRA, but that's something I'm willing to investigate. Ms. Ryan did not answer about gross negligence with FIFRA. She discussed the fact that she was unaware of another state that released liability for gross negligence. Madam Chair, can I want to give a little comparison, if I may. Rodenine, that is a insecticide, pesticide that is used. We use them to poison entire water systems so that they kill all the pike in the system. And rodenine, when it arrives in a container, has this danger sticker on it, because in a concentrated form, it's dangerous. When it's applied in a much less concentrated form. The toxicity, from what I read, is gone in 5 to 6 days in spring sunlight. Quickly reaches its half-life and is no longer toxic. Why am I bringing that up? Because we're talking about permitted use for a very specific case. That's my explanation for the treatment of power poles using Penta. The Department of Fish and Game, when you talk about the risk to fish, rodenine is not good for fish. That's why we use it. In this case, Penta is used very locally. When there have been samples, they remain very close to the pole and very low levels. I mean, I just, when we talk about a banned substance, the reason that it is exempted under FIFRA is because of a very specific use. This bill talks about a very specific use. It is related to the installation, removal, and replacement of power poles that are treated with a substance that's used all over the country. I think we can paint a picture that makes it sound like the impacts to the environment are far worse than its actual potential. And I just wanted to make sure we had that sort of relationship. This is specifically on a permitted use. And as we talked about it yesterday, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of existing locations around the state that every ratepayer is invested in that receives power from a utility. And what we're attempting to do is simply limit liability in accordance with federal law. We simply didn't have that waiver in state law. So I just wanted to remind the committee of the purpose of this bill. And I think it's very useful information when used in that context.
Senator Wilikowski.
Just a couple of points on that, and I guess a question. We've heard testimony there's 250,000 poles all across Alaska. I think we're hearing now of maybe the first instance of one that contaminated. So I agree. I mean, I think it's extremely, extremely rare that this actually happens. My concern is the rare instance when it does happen and someone is damaged by this. I think there's probably a likelihood that maybe it won't ever happen. But and if it's not a dangerous substance, well, I guess we don't even need the bill, right? Because there would be no damages and no costs associated. That being said, I just think it's important to make a distinction. I'm not aware of any waiver of liability under federal law. Under federal law, if you cause damages and you're using this toxic substance, you are responsible for those damages. I'm not aware of any waiver under federal law or any state law. If I'm wrong, I'm sure someone out there will correct me. But I am curious, and maybe Ms. Ryan knows this, or somebody from the administration knows this, but I'm curious if Fish and Game or any other departments have undertaken any studies of wood poles or pentachlorophenol that is used in the state of Alaska and the impacts on wildlife, fish, humans, or the environment. I'm curious if there have been any studies. I've heard that Fish and Game was undertaking a study. Is anyone aware of that, Ms. Ryan or anyone?
Ms. Ryan, did you hear the question?
Yes, Madam Chairman. Senator, we'll ask you through the chair. It's actually our division, Spill Prevention and Response, that's doing a study right now, the Contaminated Sites Program, on some poles and the Kenai Wildlife Refuge, which is, I would suggest, the impetus for this legislation. We don't have those results back yet, but that said, I'm not aware of any other work being done in the state of Alaska related to PENTA, but we all rely heavily on the work done by EPA when it comes to pesticides, or which this product is considered a pesticide, and the work that they've done is very thorough and easily accessible online. They review, as I said in my last testimony, products like this every 5 years to evaluate any new science that's come up. They rank the risk of the product to different species in the environment, and it's all very reliable information that's available.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Is there, I'm just curious how far you've gone into your study and what you've found, if anything. I mean, maybe this is just not an issue at all that we need to worry about. Are you finding any?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the contractor is collecting samples now. We're getting the data in coordination with a project from the Department of Transportation that's moving a road and is adjusting a road and therefore moving some poles nearby. So they just packed this project onto their work to move those poles around. And those samples, I believe, were collected this month or maybe next month. So we won't have the results for probably several weeks at the earliest. And the question we're trying to answer is if the product, and we know what the product does and its toxicity. That's been clearly defined already by EPA. What we're trying to understand is if it behaves in our environment the same way it did in Vermont. Is it migrating off the pole 6 inches or is it migrating off the pole 6 feet? Those are the kinds of information we're interested in to figure out how to develop best management practices for the industry when they utilize these poles in wetlands. And hopefully that data will be consistent with what the state of Vermont found. We assume it will be, but that's what we're waiting to find out.
Further questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Wilikowski. Yeah,
just a point. I know there's a rush to get this to get this through. I just wonder if we're being a little premature in light of the fact that we have a study that's going on right now. We don't know the impacts. We don't know whether this is permeating into waters or not. I would really just urge us to slow down a little bit on this bill. I'm concerned about the pace in which it's moving forward.
I'll reiterate what I said earlier. The bill will be held. Amendments will be accepted by 5 p.m. tomorrow. And we will address it again on Friday. Senator Machiki, did you have another comment?
Madam Chair, I have a correction for the record. Senator Wilikowski said of the 250,000 poles that there was one instance of damage, and I just wanted to clarify that there has been no damage. We are talking today because there is a detectable level in one instance of a unscientific sampling. So that's a pretty different outcome. I just want to be clear about that. We certainly welcome any research by the department. The reality of it is we have 250,000 poles in the state. And as we learn, if we learn something different, we may have a different way of handling poles in the future. This bill is about existing exposure to the ratepayers and the utilities that provide those services in the state of Alaska. So I think that's a pretty important differentiation. But it's to be clear, of the 250,000 poles in the state, we do not know of a single instance of damage.
Thank you. Further questions for the bill sponsor or any of the folks online, DEC or Ledge Legal? All right. Seeing none, We will set Senate Bill 173 aside then until Friday. Amendments due by 5 p.m. tomorrow. So with that, we will take up the last item on our agenda. This is Senate Bill 92 from Senator Michicki. Senate Bill 92 was heard on March 27th and March 31st of 2017. This is the third hearing of Senate Bill 92. Senator Michicki has let me know that he's done some additional work on the bill, and I offer him the opportunity to come forward and give a brief overview of the objective of Senate Bill 92, and then we'll take a look at a committee substitute. Senator Michicki, would you like to give a brief at ease? Proposed committee substitute. Senator Coghill, a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that work order 30LS0481 Juliet before the committee as the working document for Senate Bill 92.
I'll object for purposes of discussion, and I invite my committee staff to come forward and explain the changes. The committee substitute, for the public who are listening, was posted last Friday on the website, so it is available to the public who are watching right now.
Madam Chair, this is Ike Gilopso, staff to Senator Geese on the Senate Resources Committee. The committee in its packet has a document entitled Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 92, Explanation of Changes from Version Delta to Version Juliet. I understand, Madam Chair, it's your will to go through these changes, list them briefly, and then defer to the sponsor staff to do an updated sectional analysis and to defer to the sponsor's office to offer any editorial questions on those changes.
That is correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With that, the first change, Madam Chair, in the proposed committee substitute occurs on page 2, line 28, and this amends section 3, which is Alaska Statute 0525055I, by removing the words "the United States or." As a clarification, Madam Chair, those words, "the United States or," are currently in existing law, and they also appeared in the previous version of this bill. Change 2, Madam Chair, occurs on page 5, line 10. That amends section 9, Alaska Statute 3030010A, by removing the word "docked." And like the prior change, Madam Chair, the word "docked" is currently in existing law and also appeared in the previous version of this bill. Change 3, Madam Chair, occurs on page 5, line 20. This amends Section 11, Alaska Statute 3030010E, as an echo, by changing the proposed penalty from a B misdemeanor to an A misdemeanor. In consultation with Legislative Legal, Madam Chair, we understand that the previous version of this bill had proposed to make the violation a Class B misdemeanor. This committee substitute proposes existing law be reverted back to it as a violation under 3030010. Because since the original writing of this law years ago, there are no longer, as we understand, unclassified misdemeanors, rather than reverting back to the legal language that was now considered archaic under the legislative drafting manual, the drafter suggested putting back in a Class A misdemeanor, hence the reason for that change. Change 4, Madam Chair, is on page 5, line 27, and this amends section 12, which is AS 3030010. And this removes the words subsection A of to the proposed newly created section F as in Foxtrot. The newly created subsection Foxtrot to AS 3030010 permits the Department of Natural Resources and municipalities to report a violation to the Attorney General. The previous version only permitted reporting of a violation to 3030010 alpha. And so this change by removing alpha is more inclusive and allows any reporting under the section of 3030010. Change 5, Madam Chair, occurs on page 6, lines 4 through 6. And it amends section 13, which is a proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030015, by rewriting the following sentence to read, "On application for injunctive relief and a finding that a person has violated 3030010, the Superior Court may grant the injunction." In the prior version, Madam Chair, this sentence read, on application for injunctive relief and a finding of a violation or a threatened violation, the Superior Court shall grant the injunction. The big changes there, Madam Chair, are the specific reference to AS 3030010 and the change from a proscriptive shall to a permissive may. Turning to page 2 of the explanation of changes, Madam Chair, change number 6 occurs on page 6, lines 14 and 17 of the committee substitute, and that amends section 14, Alaska Statute 3030030, by changing the days a vessel owner has to obtain authorization to be exempted from the derelict classification from 30 to 14. Change 7, Madam Chair, is on page 7, lines 5 and 8, and this amends section 15, Alaska Statute 3030040, by changing the wording to read the state agency or municipality. The prior version of the bill proposed using the wording the state or municipal agency, and in this document, Madam Chair, from here on out, the majority of those changes are conforming to that change in wording. Change number 8, Madam Chair, is on page 7, line 7, and this amends section 15, Alaska Statute 3030040, by adding the words, if possible. The prior version of this bill required the state agency or municipality to physically post a written notice of impoundment on the vessel 30 days prior to impoundment without exception. Change 9, Madam Chair, occurs on page 7, lines 27 through 28. And this amends section 16, which would be the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030040, by adding language that reads, with the state agency or municipality that sent the notice. The reason for this, Madam Chair, is that in the prior version of the bill, the vessel owner was afforded the opportunity to file a demand for a pre-impoundment hearing, but the bill in the previous version was silent about which entity to whom the vessel owner could make such a demand. Change number 10, ma'am, is on page 8, lines 9 and 16 through 17, and this amends section 16, which is the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030040. And this changes the words to read the state agency or municipality, just as in the prior change number 7. And that is also true, Madam Chair, for change 11 on page 8, lines 21 through 22, amending section 17, which would be the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030045. And change 12, page 9, lines 9 through 10, 12, 16, 23, 25, 27, and line 29, which would amend section 18, which would be a proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030055. Madam Chair, change 13, on page 9, line 26 of the committee substitute, amends section 18, which is the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030055, and it changes a cross-reference from Alaska Statute 3030097 to 3030096, and this is due to a change that occurs later at change number 20 in the explanation of changes document, where there is a removing and a renumbering of those citations, and so this is a proper cross-reference to that. Change 14, Madam Chair, is on page 10, lines 19 through 20, and page 11, lines 1, 9, and 12. And this amends section 20, the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030065, by, just like in change 7 and many before it, rewording the state agency or municipality. This turns now to page 3 of the explanation of changes document, Madam Chair, to change number 15, page 11, lines 12 through 20. And this amends section 20, which would be the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030065. And this adds a new paragraph 2 to subsection ECHO that reads, quote, the hearing officer shall award to the owner attorney fees and costs incurred in the hearing. The award shall be made as provided in Rule 69, 79, and 82 Alaska Rules and Civil Procedures. The prior paragraphs, Madam Chair, in the prior version of the bill, 1, 2, and 3, have also been consolidated under paragraph 1. And what the committee sees now is an organizing of subparagraphs alpha, beta, and C. Charlie, thank you. Change 16, Madam Chair, is on page 11, line 24. Amend section 21, the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030075, by, like change 7, changing the wording to read, state agency or municipality. Madam Chair, the prior version, section 22, which was related to insurance requirements, was removed in this committee substitute. And as a consequence of that, all further changes are going to be cross-referenced with the according renumbering of the sections. And that takes it to change 18, Madam Chair, which is found on page 12, lines 2 and 22. And this amends Alaska Statute 3030090. This was the current Section 22, the prior version Section 23. And it adds the word abandoned to the list of actions that would constitute a derelict classification. Change number 19, Madam Chair, is on page 12, lines 8 through 24. And this amends Alaska Statute 3030090, which is the current Section 22, the prior version, Section 23, removing the words "and if" on line 8. The removal of words requires reformatting and the subparagraphing into paragraphs. And the words "and if," Madam Chair, were in the prior version and in existing law, just like the first two changes in the explanation of documents related to DOCT and the United States government. Change 20, Madam Chair, is on page 12, line 26. That amends the title of the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030095. That is the current Section 23, the prior version Section 24. And it renames it the duties and powers of the Commissioner from the Derelict Vessel Prevention Program. And conforming to this change, Madam Chair, the subsequent new proposed section, Alaska Statute 3030096, entitled Duties and Powers of the Department, has now been removed, reformatted up, and absorbed into 3030095. And the new proposed section of Alaska Statute 3030097, entitled Derelict Vessel Prevention Fund, is renumbered and is now Section 3030096 under the committee substitute. Change 21, Madam Chair, is on page 12, line 27, and this amends the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030095, that is the current Section 23, the prior version Section 24, and this adds language that reads subject to appropriation. Change 22, Madam Chair, can be found on page 13, line 14, and amends the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030096, the current Section 23, the prior version Section 24, changing the wording to read the state agency or municipality. Turning to the fourth and final page of the explanation of changes document, Madam Chair, change 23 is to be found on page 13, line 25 of the committee substitute, and this amends the proposed newly created Alaska Statute 3030096, which is found in the current Section 23 and could have been found in the prior version, Section 24. And it changes the paragraph beta 4 to read now, money collected under Alaska Statute 0525096, alpha 5 and 6. The prior version read, monies received by the Department of Administration for registering and titling vessels. Those references, Madam Chair, Alaska Statute 0525096, A5 and 6, appear in Section 5 of both the committee substitute and the prior version of the bill. The final change, Madam Chair, change 24 can be found on page 14, lines 17 through 18. This amends the Alaska Statute 3030170, the current Section 25, the prior Section 26, and it defines state agency rather than the prior version, which had state or municipal agency, and this is in complying with the initial change in change number 7 and reformatted throughout. All subsequent changes, Madam Chair, are reformatting to the sections and renumbering. That's the summation of the changes in the committee substitute before the bill.
Thank you very much. So at this time, I'm going to ask Senator Michiki to come forward and or his staff to do a brief sectional.
Madam Chair, Rachel Hanke from my staff is going to cover the sectional.
That'd be great. We do have quite a few folks online and in the room to testify, so brief overview, and we'll get on to public testimony.
For the record, my name is Rachel Hanke, staff to Senator Michiki. Section 1 requires that a boat placed on the waters of the state be titled, registered, or numbered. Section 2 requires all boats have a certificate of number if operated on the waters of the state for more than 90 consecutive days or 60 consecutive days for barges, unless otherwise provided in the chapter. Section 3 provides exceptions from numbering and registration for boats and barges. Section 4 adds new section for establishing a system for for certification of titles. Section 5 inserts new cross-reference. Section 6 increases boat registrations for a 3-year period from $24 to $30, adds barge registration fee at $75 for a three-year period, adds boat title and duplicate boat title fees of $20. Section 7 adds the definition of barge. Section 8 repeals and reenacts definitions from AS 0525-100. Sections 9 and 10 clarify existing language. Section 11 raises the fine for abandoning a vessel from not more than 500 to not less than 5,000 or more than 10,000, and lowers the maximum term of imprisonment from 6 months to 90 days, and also adds the forfeiture of a vessel. Section 12 allows the department or a municipality to report violations to the Attorney General in order to enforce criminal penalties. Section 13 adds a new section allowing an aggrieved person to file a civil injunction with a penalty of not more than $1,000 per violation. Section 14 allows the department to provide written authorization for a vessel to be left within 14 days and clarifies language. Section 15 changes section to pre-impoundment notice and hearing, requires 30 days notice prior to impoundment, requires the impounding authority to post notice on a vessel when possible and online. Section 16 adds new subsections establishing notice specification and defines the procedure for pre-impoundment hearings. Section 17 adds new section establishing requirements for the notice of disposition. Section 18, new section providing clear guidelines of procedure for impoundment of a vessel by the state or municipality. Section 19 removes requirement that an interested party taking possession of a derelict vessel post security. Section 20 establishes procedure for the immediate impoundment of derelict vessels that pose an imminent threat to safety. Section 21 adds new sections stating that the individual owning an impounded vessel is liable for all costs incurred in the process. Section 22 provides situations that would make a vessel derelict. Section 23 gives the department the power to establish and administer the Derelict Vessels Prevention Program, which includes education, outreach, and advisory council, and creates a program fund which consists of money appropriated from donations, vessel sales under this chapter, federal funds, civil penalties, and money collected from barge registration and titling of vessels. Section 24 adds floating facility to the definition of vessel. Section 25 adds more definitions. Section 26 names this chapter the Derelict Vessels Act. Section 27 adds titling to Title 37. Section 28 allows civil penalties collected under AS 3030 to be deposited into the Derelict Vessel Prevention Program Fund. Section 29 removes repealed sections, allowing the fund to remain without federal funding. Section 30, repealing sections of AS 3030. Section 31, transition language, allowing DNR and DOA to adopt regulations. Section 32, revisor's instruction to change two headings, and sections 33 through 36 are effective dates.
Thank you very much, Ms. Henke. So because I have some folks needing to testify who have meetings coming up very quickly, I am going to remove my objection to adopting this as the working document. Is there further objection? Seeing none, this comes before us now as the working document. Public testimony was left open back on March, whenever it was, when we last heard this bill. So we're going to continue public testimony now. And Kathy Wasserman is here wishing to testify, and she has a meeting in a few minutes. So we'll bring her forward first. While she's coming forward, committee members have a packet on their desk of resolutions from various communities, as well as Ms. Wasserman, related to this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll be very quick. And members of the committee, Kathy Wasserman, exec of the Alaska Municipal League. We have had this issue as one of our top priorities for over 2.5 years. This is a huge issue. Almost every one of our municipalities in one way or another has access to water. And if you get down to the smaller communities, I'm not talking very small, but many of our communities, the heart of the community is the harbor. That is where everything ends up and goes out of, and when that gets cluttered up with boats, it is very difficult for municipalities to go through the paperwork and all of the work that it takes to get to deal with that vessel. And those people that have owned those vessels, usually the problems arise long before that. They stop paying their mortgage, or it gets hauled out and put on a beach. It becomes a huge danger because no matter where it drifts to, that's usually where other boats drift to if they lose their power. So This is a very good bill, and we would just encourage you to please pass this bill out. We support it 100%. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Wasserman? All right, seeing none, thank you. Next we'll go to Carl Yucatil. Sorry, Carl, if I mispronounced. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Carl Yucatil. I'm the president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. I'm also the local port director here in Juneau, and I'm here to ask the committee to support this bill. We believe the membership of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators are 43 harbors strong. We have unanimous support for this bill moving forward. We've also provided other documentation from other communities that have also supported it. Ms. Wasserman spoke very eloquently in support, and I'm just here to go on the record that the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators strongly supports this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chairman. In Juneau here, a couple years ago, we had a, I referred to as a derelict vessel, a tugboat sunk in a harbor out here in the channel, and it was a navigation hazard and had to be raised. And that, from your perspective, what would this bill, tools would this give you to deal with vessels like that that you don't currently have in your harbor system?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think that the strongest argument I can make in that particular case with the motor vessel Challenger, when it went down, the Challenger was in Douglas Harbor. She was no longer welcome in our harbor. She went out. She anchored on DNR tidelands. When she sank, the Coast Guard came in, opened the oil spill trust fund to raise and demolish that vessel at the tune of $2 million. But to this day, the Coast Guard is still doesn't know who the responsible owner is. This is one of those, without a title, without a clear title, the ownership of that vessel is still unknown. And I think the Coast Guard is going to have a difficult time in holding one of the two parties responsible.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
We have several. That ship should have had a marine title at some point, and most likely a marine title till the end. So that vessel was titled at some point, and then there was maybe some questions on the transfer and who's the guy that holds the title at the end. So I'm kind of curious. This bill requires a title. That ship already had a title. What tools is this going to actually produce in this instance? And you might want to, for those watching home, might want to define what a marine title is, because not all boats are marine title.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think, and I probably shouldn't speak with great authority on what the Coast Guard is doing and what enforcement activity they are taking for the Challenger now. But I can speak to other specific instances in the Juneau Harbor system where we have boats that we have irresponsible boat owners that will transfer ownership of vessels on a bar napkin, and ownership flips with a handshake, and just having a clear title would allow my harbor master to pursue the actual owner of several derelict vessels that we have in our harbor system today.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
That's where I'm having trouble with some of the concepts, not the issue that we, that derelict vessels are a problem. I have some concept issues, I guess, with this bill. So in that case, we've got we were just talking about a marine title vessel. And now let's talk a little bit about the registered vessels. So in this case, we've got the smaller boats, probably less than 27 feet or somewhere in that neighborhood. most of them are registered with the state. They got AK numbers on them, and we got to get a sticker every few years that expires. And if you don't have your sticker, you get a ticket. And you're supposed to carry your registration on your boat at all times. And if the trooper pulls you over to check on your hunting license and you don't have that, then you've got an issue with the trooper. That, you know, you're supposed to have that registration. So as a tenant in your harbor, and I'm one of them, as you're probably well aware, with a registered vessel, titled vessel. So let's pretend it's just a registered vessel. And I pay you once a month as a tenant, and I all of a sudden someone else shows up, the lady next to me, and living on the boat and paying the, you know, the harbor master every month by check or by cash or some form. What tools do you need to ensure that she owns the boat and not me, that you couldn't already have as a harbor master here in Juneau or Petersburg or any other community that has enterprise funds dealing with harbors, as far as knowing who your tenant is, who's responsible for the boat, if they have current registrations. And I think every year, at least for my boat, I have to produce an insurance document here in Juneau to show that it's not only insurable, but it's insured, and in the smaller boats you guys might deal with it different. So I'm really struggling with why the organized harbors, and you just happen to be the first harbor guy up, why the organized harbors around Alaska can't keep track of their tenants just like I keep track of the renters in my apartments when I had apartments. I knew who I rented to. I knew who wrote me the check. And if it's somebody else, I got an issue. And so help me with that, because, you know, I've seen the derelict boats in Aurora Harbor over the years and have spoken many times with the harbor masters around Southeast on trying to deal with this problem.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, and this might be a law-type question, but I don't think registered necessarily means owner. And so I just know that we have difficulty with some clientele in our harbors in establishing clear ownership, and oftentimes where somebody will be in the rears with their payments and will say it's time for you to go, and they will say I sold it last night to a guy at the Pioneer Bar, and it is a problem. And the lawyers that I've spoken to have indicated that title is important in establishing ownership, and perhaps other harbor masters that come forward to this body can elaborate on their knowledge of the situation.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, I think it's similar to used cars or old junk cars. They have a car, sell it to somebody, drive it for a while, and they ditch it out the road. And then they're trying to figure out who owns the car, but the car has a title. So you get into the whole enforcement issue and the claiming issue. So I'm not so sure that this isn't going to set us up in the same boat as automobiles, where we don't get the solution we want to. We're driving after organized municipalities. And at some point we need to talk about the unorganized out in the hinterland, which would be outside of the responsibility of the Juneau Harbor or Petersburg, Sitka Harbor or Kodiak or wherever. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator von Imhoff, do you have a question?
Yes. So I see a fiscal note here. It's about $589,000. So I guess some of the question is, and I think that's for the fees that may be collected by titling, registrations, and abandoned vessel fees. Is this, and then the section there is that there will be duties of this particular, and I don't know if this is for you, duties of this particular fund if it's appropriated. So will the duties of this fund cease to exist if the fees are not raised? So the duties of this program will just, if they don't raise enough, I mean, it's almost like a chicken and the egg a little bit. So we kind of have to wait maybe a few years so we raise some money, and then maybe this program can get kicked off the ground or something like that.
Senator Von Imhoff, I'm not sure the Harbor Master is equipped to answer the question.
Excuse me.
I'm not quite done yet. Maria Thompson from the Division of Motor Vehicles is on the line and would possibly have some information about the fiscal note, which of course is not our purview, but is an interesting question. Ms. Thompson, can you hear us?
Hi.
Hi. Did you hear Senator Von Imhoff's question about the fiscal note?
Yes, through the chair. So the fiscal note
Could you identify yourself first for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. for the record, my name is Marla Thompson. I'm the director of the DMV.
Great. Thank you. If you could give us the answer that you have.
Yes, through the chair. The fiscal note is based off of the registration numbers that we currently have. We have 68,000 boats registered, and so a title fee of $20 would generate approximately $1.36 million. And we divide that over a three-year period because it's a three-year registration period, and we assume that the customers would come in title. So the first year, about a third of those would be expected to collect the revenues for that.
Senator Von Imhoff, did you get your question answered, or did you have follow-up for Ms. Thompson?
No, my question was not answered, but I will ask at another time, perhaps in Senate Finance at another time.
All right. Thank you. So next up we have Brian Hawkins, who's in the room. Thank you, Mr. Uditil.
Good afternoon. My name is, for the record, Brian Hawkins. I'm harbor master for the city of Homer. I'm also vice president for the Association of Harbor Masters. And I support Senate Bill 92, and also in your packet of resolutions, the city of Homer City Council also passed a resolution in support of this bill. Homer has, over the years, had to deal with quite a few abandoned derelict vessels, and these were, in our case, these were large vessels, 80 feet to some 180 feet long. Even one barge, it was 450 feet long, that was dumped on our beach. So we have passed a local code that helped with that, underway policy, and that was a tool that we used to encourage vessels to move along. The cities have clearly defined boundaries. We can write local laws that help us enforce people to make better decisions or move on. And through legal, we can also impound and dispose. So, we did in Homer deal with quite a few of these by impounding and disposing, breaking them up. The issue of title, if I could, currently there is no title for a vessel in a state. It's a registration. So you register your vessel, but there's no actual title. And we have the boat builders in Homer who say that people who buy vessels from them are concerned because they don't actually get a title for the vessel. So this would actually institute a system to get a title for the vessel. And that's
good.
I stand by to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Sure.
Senator Stedman.
I have a 52-foot boat, and I have a marine title, and I pay every year to the Coast Guard, and I have to renew it. I've got a title of that boat.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, you have documentation, U.S. Coast Guard documentation. It's not a title.
Other questions for Mr. Hawkins? Thank you very much for your testimony. And I do know that your community's resolution is here. Next up, we have Rachel Lord. Rachel, you're present? Great. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Thank you so much for taking public testimony on this. So I was going to be expert testimony on Monday. Now that there's public testimony, I want to really try to constrain my comments to make sure there's enough time for everybody. I really appreciate everybody hearing this issue. Our current derelict vessel laws are extremely Thank you. For the record, Rachel Lord. I am the Executive Secretary for the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators.
And Ms. Lord, may I interject? I think you're the last person that I have wanting to testify. So please elaborate.
Okay. Well, because I do want to have an opportunity to just make sure that the committee is completely clear on the origination of the language of this bill and hopefully answer some of the questions that several of you have raised. Our state statutes are outdated. They were written in 1976, briefly updated in 2013, and that update opened up authority which had only rested with the Department of Transportation because of their historical role as the owner of all of our harbors. And so through a situation in Kachemak Bay where two vessels sank, it became clear that it was a problem that DOT was the only one with authority to exercise the chapter because they didn't really have any mandate to do so in the present day. So we did open up through House Bill 131 the use of the chapter by all state agencies and municipalities. That was really just a starting point. The association and others supported the formation of an ad hoc derelict vessel task force. So that task force, which I facilitated, met for 9 full days over a year and a half. And we had the entire alphabet soup of every state agency, federal agency, the municipalities, Senator Murkowski's office, the Arasaramute Native Council out in Bethel, and some private salvage companies who participated in those meetings. And around the table, the group discussed case studies in Alaska, what's going on, what are people dealing with, what are the problems in preventing these situations, what's the problems in managing them, what are people's jurisdictional boundaries and authorities, what are other states doing around the country. And through that, it became very clear that a full rewrite of our statutes was really a very necessary first step. And so the group we did have pro bono legal assistance from the municipal law firm of Birch Horton, Bittner, and Chereau, and they worked with us to go through these very real problems that everybody at the table was facing and agreed upon and craft solutions and a suite of tools to say, okay, how can we start actually making some forward progress on this? Right now in the state of Alaska, and this just occurred with the Akutan out of, off of Unalaska, before you want to take legal action, you need to decide, are you going to determine that vessel is abandoned or derelict? And this is inexplicable. You've got the Akutan is left. It is left off of Unalaska. And if you determine under state law right now if it's derelict or abandoned, you have two different courses of action for due process, for hearings, for noticing. You also have two different paths of options for disposition of that vessel. And so you better choose pretty carefully. And that is a layer of confusion and lack of clarity within our current statutes that's like I said, inexplicable and not helpful to anyone. SB 92 does clarify not only the notice and impoundment process for agencies and municipalities, but it also improves due process for vessel owners. Some would contend that perhaps our current statutes are not federally constitutional under admiralty law and do not afford vessel owners the proper amount of due process that should be afforded to somebody under federal admiralty law. So SB 92 does clarify that. To answer some of the concerns that have been raised regarding registration, titling, and the expansion of that universe, there is no silver bullet. We are not going to stop everyone from doing irresponsible things. Under SB 92, federally documented vessels would not be required to get a state title, However, they would be asked to register with the state for that $30 every three, or the increased fee, $24 to $30. So if SB 92 passes, it would be a $30 every 3 years. That is true in at least 26 other states, including Washington, that federally documented vessels are also asked to register with the state. One of the problems with federal documentation and relying on that exclusively for a tracking of ownership is that the point at which somebody stops paying their documentation or tracking that, changing that if they're a new owner, that documentation is no longer really very useful. And at no point at this time does the state of Alaska have any document of any of these boats existing. If you have ever owned a boat trailer and tried to get that titled or registered, you know that it can be really challenging. If you've ever had any trouble with that at all, you know how frustrating it is. It is way easier to own a boat in the state of Alaska right now than a boat trailer, because a boat trailer is regulated as a highway vehicle. A boat, I and many others would contend, has a much greater potential public liability than a boat trailer. And so expanding that universe of registration, I appreciate very much so that we don't really want to saddle our commercial fisheries and anybody else with added bureaucracy and added layers of paperwork. However, I will say that this is born out of very real problems that our agencies and municipalities around the state are finding daily, yearly, as issues arise around the state. So this language was crafted in a way to really try to help the state have some more recourse when it comes to determining a vessel owner. Some of our municipalities will not really worry about it. They have legal help that will go, and they will fight. I don't care if you say it's you who owns it or that person who owns it. You can fight about it in some other court. But the fact remains, with nearly every derelict vessel issue that comes up, there is contention of who owns it, because there is a huge amount of liability on the hook. SB 92 clarifies liability for owners, which is hugely important. Make sure that it's really clear that the state wants to hold people accountable. If you buy a boat, the easiest dumping ground should not be state or municipal waters. And right now it is. Our neighboring states have dramatically cracked down on their laws, and we are a very easy target at this point for dumping of boats. And finally, I will just say that as far as the derelict vessel prevention program goes, DNR, I believe, does have a $0 fiscal note for this bill. So, you know, the intention, the hope, is that there are some funds raised to try to help address this situation. We found in other states that they have, even if they don't have a lot of money, a little money goes a long way for consolidating efforts. Right now, DNR, as our land manager, is dealing with these problems. They are spending staff time and state resources on dealing with derelict vessels throughout the state, across the coast, and across the river systems. They are doing it in a little, no disrespect to the department, but it's a bit of a whack-a-mole situation, and they are doing it in a way that is not consolidated, not streamlined. There is no one you can call if you have a derelict vessel in an unincorporated area or in state waters. There is no one you would call to talk to about that situation. The language in the bill is permissive to allow for the department to create that program, to allow for them to look proactively at this issue. It does not require them to do it immediately, and I do think that it would take time over time with resources developing for that to be able to really come to bear. But it gives the department that tool to be able to move in that direction, which nationwide, that is the direction our other states are going. This is a national problem. The federal delegation is aware of that. But in the meantime, we are still back in 1976. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lord. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, just thinking about the derelicts and the ones that have boats. And they happen to be a tenant that doesn't pay their rent and their boat sinks or what have you, and they play the hot potato game. And I'm sure there's exceptions to this, possibly with some bigger vessels. But most of those people are living basically week to week. They're flat broke. They don't have anything. A lot of them are, frankly, drug addicts, unemployed. Some of them are employed and are not drug addicts. But I can assure you we have crime issues in the harbors all around, and they don't come from the $2 and $3 million boats. They come from mostly the derelict boats in the harbor. So how is this identification of the derelicts going to help? extract money from them. How are we going to get them to pay? If the boat out here was $2 million, and I don't know what it costs to raise another little skiff in the harbor, $50,000 or $30,000 or whatever it is, how do you get money out of these people to pay for it?
Ms. Lord?
Through the chair. Senator Stedman, I think that, you know, there are a couple of components to that. That one, there's no silver bullet. We're not going to solve any problem with one solution. Even a suite of tools, an increased toolbox, is not going to solve the problem. We have laws against drunk driving, and we have laws against parking in front of fire hydrants. That doesn't stop people from doing it, but it deters more people than it would otherwise. One of the big problems that is not explicitly addressed under SB 92, although there is a provision in there to help with it, is the cradle-to-grave problem, which we have not addressed. Everything that is created has a shelf life. Hopefully a well-maintained boat will be in the water operating for many, many, many years, decades or more. But that takes money and resources, neither of which are ever guaranteed. And so we have not come up with a plan for what do we do when a boat is at the end of its useful life. Right now, the default plan is to keep passing it down the line until it is with the person who has the least resources to deal with it. And that is a problem. Under SB 92, the state taking the situation more seriously, raising the awareness, clarifying the laws, clarifying the liability of an owner, is a huge step in the right direction. And it's a step in the right direction for helping the agencies and the municipalities legally deal with these situations when invariably they do and will arise. But it also, under the permissive language for the Derelict Vessel Prevention Program, does allow for the department, with resources permitting, to explore options for that cradle-to-grave question, including voluntary vessel turn-in programs, which have been hugely beneficial and saved states around the country a lot of money. The state of California has seen huge improvements in their financial picture when it comes to derelict and abandoned vessels by having this voluntary turn-in program. We are a different place. Right, not like our harbors can't pull out all the boats. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't even really have the salvage companies or the shipbreakers really to do it. But we do need to look at, we do collectively need to look at what are we going to do with these boats when they are at the end of their useful life, and how can we, the buck has to stop someplace. So I do believe strongly that this bill is very much a critical step in the right direction. Is it going to stop all the problems? Absolutely not. And if I had a solution to do that, I would be trying to do that one. I don't think that solution exists, but this is a major step forward.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, did you have follow-up?
Yep. And just a quick positive comment before my follow-up, because, well, maybe all my comments are positive. You know, the organized harbors that we have around the state, they all are managed a little different. But one of the things I think is useful that Juneau does that some of the other harbors don't do is require insurance certificates. And by requiring an insurance certificate, you have to get an insurance company to sign off. You're going to have a survey, and your boat's going to have to be fairly sound to get that insurance certificate. That helps tip off the harbor master that he might have a problem in his harbor if you got a big boat that can't even get insured. And it comes back to the point, know your tenant, and be responsive to who you're renting to, and you don't have to rent to anybody that shows up. The other point I'd like to make is these folks that have, you know, the last owner, titled or not, most likely are going to not have a lot of funds, disposable funds, and when you go to City Hall, You know, pull it up on the trailer, take it to the dump to smash it, or whatever you're going to do. You're looking at, you know, hundreds of dollars for a little boat and thousands of dollars for a big boat. You know, if you had like the boat that sat on the rock in Sitka a few months ago, a 75-foot boat, took out its keel, and it's probably the end of its useful life as a boat. I don't know what kind of bill he's going to get. But to smash that boat and ship it to Washington is going to be extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is the guy's life savings was in the boat before he put it on the rock. So how do you get the guy that has no resources and hand him a big bill at the junkyard. It's not going to happen.
Ms. Lord.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, and the rest of the committee, people have dreams, and we want to protect those dreams and the freedoms of having the dream to take this old tender and I'm going to do something great with it. We want to protect that freedom, but we are seeing huge liability as a result of those dreams gone awry. My wish, and it might be utopian, but my wish is that the state takes the situation seriously enough that we have enough resources to be enforcing our mooring laws, that our municipalities are able to be strict enough with their laws, that around the state the liability is big enough that you are going to think three times before you sign that bill of sale, and that people are more circumspect about buying a boat because there is more liability associated with it than there currently is. And right now, our harbor system is very diverse. And it is true, we have some harbors such as Juneau, such as Homer, Cordova, Kodiak. We have a number of harbors within our 40-plus harbors system, municipal harbor system, that have great ordinances, that they've done a lot of work, they spent a lot of money to protect themselves. But what that means is that those boats leave the Homer Harbor and they moor on state waters. Or they moor in smaller communities that don't have the legal resources to deal with them or the financial resources. Or they moor on tribal lands. I mean, people are, you know, it just is a hot potato. And so will the larger communities protect themselves? Absolutely. They are doing so. And they will continue to do so. The people who lose are the state loses, so the public as a whole loses. Our smaller municipalities, our unorganized communities, they are the losers in that. And the protected one at the end of the day is the person who made a really poor choice with no resources to buy a crappy old boat. And they're the one who gets to walk away pretty free.
Thank you. Further questions for Ms. Lord? Seeing none, thank you very much. I'd like to call forward Ed King, Special Assistant to the Commissioner of DNR. We don't at this time have a DNR fiscal note, and you might possibly be able to speak to that, Mr. King. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Ed King, Special Assistant to Commissioner of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, we are working on a fiscal note. We had some issues surrounding the question that Senator Von Amhoff raised earlier. I'm just trying to interpret the intent of the bill and the expectations of the department and what those costs might be. Working through that, we interpret the bill to mean that to the extent that there are funds available within the fund that's being created by the bill, only then would we be taking the actions required and the resources would be available. So we are under that interpretation of the bill as it's drafted today. We do have a fiscal note that is being finalized as we speak.
So, Mr. King, comment was made that right now you're expending, the department is expending a lot of resource on this subject. Is that true?
Madam Chair, can I believe Brent Goodrum is on the phone, or maybe Chris Hess may be on the phone.
I see Chris Hess. And that's great.
Madam Chair, Chris Hess would be more equipped to answer that question.
Excellent. Could you hear the question?
Yes, I did, Madam Chairman. This is Chris Hess with the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, Division Operations Manager. So our most recent example of the Akutan, we did spend considerable amount of time and resources between myself, Director Goodrum, Clark Cox, our South Central Regional Land Manager, and even our Deputy Commissioner Heidi Hansen, in terms of coordinating with federal and state and local agencies to deal with the situation in Captain's Bay down by Unalaska. We unfortunately don't have the exact number of hours, but I would say in the short span of time from August of 2017, when Akutan suffered problems with its engines until the time of actual disposal, which was in January of 2018, I would say that a rough guesstimate of the time and effort devoted to that was at least 250 hours of staff time, if not more.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hess. That's very helpful to know. Senator Stedman had a question for you.
Actually, Mr. King or whoever wants to answer it. If there was a derelict vessel, barge or boat sitting on the your tidelands, isn't it just a matter of an appropriation amount so you had the ability then to go deal with it in the Department of Law who owns it and relieve it? It's a financial issue that you don't have the money in your budget to respond to that. And if this bill is going to only produce $100,000 to $200,000 a year, it would take 10 years just to pay for the tugboat that sunk here last year. So I don't think the ends are lining up very well outside of large appropriations from us with or without this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stedman, I think your characterization is correct, that there would be a lot of money that would need to be expended in order to take a lot of actions immediately. And those funds obviously are not available, and that raises complications. If there is the will of the legislature to take those immediate actions, we would require a more direct appropriation. And to the extent of whether what we would do now, I think maybe Chris or Brent could answer that question a little bit better than I can.
Sure. And Ms. Hess is the only one that happens to be on the line right now. Ms. Hess, did you understand what was being asked of you?
If you could repeat the question, please.
Do you want to repeat the question we're posing to her, Mr. King, or do you want Senator Stedman to?
Madam Chair, I believe the question, as I heard it, was, you know, if there were to be an action that needed to be taken today, how much money and where would that money come from in order to be able to do it, and to the extent that we already have those funds available. I believe that was the question, if I heard it correctly.
Yes, the point is, if we're going to go clean up the pictures of these ships on some river, or wherever the rivers are, or down around the corner, down the straits, we could give you appropriations. We could appropriate $50 million to your department and a pile of millions to law, and you guys could go out and clean up the beaches. But with generating $150,000 a year, we're not going to clean up anything. That's the point I'm trying to drive home. This is a lot of bureaucracy created, and I think we can accomplish it on other mechanisms without creating a whole other layer of public employees.
So I think there's a question there, Ms. Hess. Do you have any comment?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, this is Chris Hess. I would have to say that was probably accurate assessment of the situation. Without a lot of additional funding, the state's hands are tied because we do not have those additional funds for either the disposal of the vessel or the staff primary resources.
Thank you, Ms. Hess. Senator Bishop, look like you have a question.
I do, ma'am. All right. Thank you. This would probably be, well, if it can be for anybody, maybe for the bill sponsor, but Ed, to the department. There's a federal law called RCRA, Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, it covers midnight dumping of hazardous materials. So I'm thinking a 400-foot barge, depends upon what was in it, and it's grounded on a state tidelands. Has anybody in the state looked at maybe trying to access some federal funds to help with cleanups?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, yes, the U.S. Coast Guard does assist in especially the removal of contaminants or environmentally dangerous materials, and they did do that in the most recent instance with the Yucatan. The boat itself, though, once the hazardous materials are removed, that's kind of where they stop. And I think we can, if it's the will of the committee, we can come back and talk more about exactly what that looks like. But yes, we do have a relationship with the Coast Guard, and they do participate in especially the removal of hazardous materials.
Follow-up, Senator Bishop?
I'm just going to try to stretch it and take the whole boat, you know what I mean? I mean, you look at the spot, Madam Chair, if I could just digress. I mean, I know what it looks appears we're trying to do. We're trying to fix, I don't know if we can get everything done retrospectively, but prospectively, we're trying to eliminate future liabilities. I get that. And so it's a start in the right direction, I think.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. King? All right, and thank you, by the way, Ms. Hess, for testifying. So I don't see anyone else online wishing to testify. Is there anyone else online? Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. So we are at the end of our allotted time. So at this time, I'm going to set Senate Bill 92 aside until Friday. So that concludes our meeting for today. Our next meeting will be on Friday, in which time we will take up Senate Bill 173 related to utility poles and Senate Bill 92 related to derelict vessels. Any amendments are due to my office by tomorrow evening at 5 p.m. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned. The time is 5:04 p.m.